Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 837. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace, whether you need a landing page, a gallery, a blog, or an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. So start your free trial today at squarespace.com. Use the offer code Nerdist. Get 10% off your first purchase. Now, I want you guys to make a thing. I keep bugging you about this, but I know deep inside that thing is just waiting to ooze out into the world. So use Squarespace, give it a digital presence. Squarespace, set your website apart. And now let's check in with the Nerdist Community Corkboard. These are happenings from you, the Nerdist Community. Who was out there? See, because I bitch at you to make stuff happen, and then when you do, now I'm obligated to talk about it, because I have been shoving you into action. But it's good for you. So one of the things I want to say, this is from very specifically the Nerdist community, Kevin Heffernan and Steve Lemmy from Super Troopers, Beer Fest, the great Nerdist podcast, Chewin' It. They have their Comedy Central special called Below the Belt. It is premiering this Friday, November 11th at midnight. Please watch it. Support these gentlemen. They're nice and they're funny. Also, I was just performing in Boston at the Wilbur Theater, which sounds like a plug for me, but it's not when you hear what I have to say. And a guy came to the show, gave me a flyer, and said, "Hey, could you mention this on the corkboard?" And I said, "I absolutely will. Try to be a man of my word." So, this Thursday, November 10th, doors are at 8 p.m., a comedian named Orlando Baxter, who just had his debut on Conan, is going to be recording his live album, and they'd love to get people out there. It's hosted by Nick Chambers and Al Park. Go out there and see him at the Rockwell. That's the Rockwell, Thursday, November 10th. Get out there. You can go to sbcomedy.bpt.me for tickets and info. The Rockwell is at on Elm Street in Somerville, Massachusetts. You might say Somerville, but Southerners say Somerville. So I apologize if I butchered the name. The name of the city is not what I need you to know. I just need you to know to go see Orlando Baxter, support live comedy, and support people who are out there making their own thing. And then finally, Jay writes, support amazing Atlanta crafters, artists, makers, and vintage sellers this holiday season for the 12th annual Indie Craft Experience Holiday Shopping Spectacular. You can shop directly from these talented people November 19th and 20th with 165-plus craft and vintage vendors, including Jay, who is the belligerent monkey, goes by the belligerent monkey. But all monkeys are belligerent. I mean, if you really want to get into it. Plus 10-plus local food vendors. So go to facebook.com/indiecraftexperience for more info. Thank you so much. I hope I would go to that if I were in Atlanta. I'm not. I'd like to be because I want to go down there and I need to be a zombie on The Walking Dead. That's what really needs to happen, you guys. But maybe next season. Maybe next season it'll happen. They're about to wrap this season, so maybe next season it'll happen. This episode, Anna Kendrick returns to the podcast. She's spectacular. I don't know what to say. She was great the first time she came on the podcast many years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it was. And she was great on her return. And I hope she comes back. She's just great to talk to and super, super, super funny. Her memoir is coming out November 15th, wherever books are sold. Pre-order it now if you can. Scrappy Little Nobody is the name of the book. Also, Trolls is out in theater. Go see that. Anna's in that with Justin Timberlake. And here she is. I'm very excited to have her back on this Little Nerdist podcast, which was sponsored also by Stamps.com. So your to-do list might seem a little daunting. There's a lot to do. You don't have a lot of time. Time is a currency that we all feel like we never have enough of. But take this off your to-do list. Don't go to the post office. Use stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage from your computer, right from your desk, or wherever your computer is. Maybe it's in your lap or in your bed, or maybe you have a really still cat and you can just put on a lap desk and then do it on there. Stamps.com will send you a digital scale. You don't need to do anything else other than print it out. Put it the exact postage you need right on whatever you're mailing, and your mail carrier will take it from you, and that's it. Sign up for Stamps.com. Use the promo code Nerdist. 4-week trial, $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist. That's Stamps.com, promo code Nerdist. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 837 with a return of Anna Kendrick. Katie, oh, would you be so kind?
Now entering Nerdist.com.
do.
What kind of gardening are you guys doing?
No, we're just talking about houseplants. And, like, I, for the first time...
The least killable ones?
Well, yeah, I mean, basically. And also, like, because I've been living in my home for the first time in, like, 4 years, like, actually spending time there, I was like, I'm going to buy plants. And I went on, like, a 2-week press tour for the first time since I bought the plants and thought, like, oh, like a character in a television program.
Yes.
I now need to, like, ask a friend to water my plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a little too big for my britches. I was keeping a couple of succulents alive, and I thought I would buy, like, a little 4-foot tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it like rejected my touch.
It hung itself.
It literally, like, I can only describe it as watching it disintegrate before my eyes. Like, I couldn't believe it. And the most surprising thing was not that I killed it, but how emotionally attached I became to it. Like, it wasn't like the little plants, if it dies, it's like, oh, I'll just get another one. But like a tree, I suddenly felt like you are like a product of evolution. You mm-hmm. made it. You are the seedling that made it, and you grew to be like 4 feet tall. And that's no small accomplishment, I think.
No.
And 2 weeks in my home and I ruined you. Like, I felt awful. It made me question like my ability to like value and care for like life forms.
It is pretty amazing how that becomes the receptacle for so much of your emotional health.
Yes.
But there are things that you can get where you can there used to be this device that you could plant in the soil and it would connect to an app and it would do an analysis of the soil and tell you like
what?
Not getting enough water, not getting enough light, not getting enough.
I
and I wish, Katie, could you just look it up? And this was like 5 or 6 years ago, so I assume the technology's actually gotten even better since then. But
because I called the, you know, the like plant shop that I bought it from and was like, I actually, which I knew was an embarrassing thing to do because I knew the answer would be no, but I couldn't help myself. I was like, is there any way you would do like a house call? Like, I have to save.
That's
this
a great
plant.
Question, though.
Like, and I was like, obviously, I don't mean for free. Like, your time is valuable. I was just, and you know. Understandably, this woman who like runs a plant shop was like, that's not really what we do here.
Someone would do that though.
I mean, she was like, you can bring it in. And it was just, it was one of those things where I just knew like it wouldn't survive me like trying to get it into my car and, you know, because it was like precarious getting it into my home.
Right.
And like now that it's dying, I was like, it'll just die on the way. So I just had to like watch it.
It's a bummer. I mean, we care very much about the gardening around our home, and we have, you know, people who are like the guy who does our gardening is essentially like he's like a scientist. So he knows when he came in, when we took over when we bought the house, the previous owners had put all these white rocks everywhere, and he came in and said, no, they bring in bacteria. It makes the soil toxic. We need to remove all that, put in proper soil, put this.
That's terrible news, because I was like, I'll just put black or white rocks everywhere.
Well, you just have to be very careful.
Like,
yeah.
The outside, I definitely just want it to be, you know, I know myself well enough to know that like a gorgeous, like luscious English garden style thing is not going to happen. So I was like, I'm just going to put like a couple cactuses and then just put like white rocks everywhere.
I have a guy for you, though.
That's really sad.
I have a guy for you, because the guy who... we don't just have some random person trim the trees and like shave them off at the top. There's like, I have a guy who's an arborist.
You realize like how fancy you sound right now? Like, I was about to say that, and then I heard the word arborist as I was already going like, you're too fancy. And then you said arborist, I don't like you anymore.
I know, I sound like a piece of shit.
I just turned on you.
I just became Gwyneth Paltrow.
You seem relatable, and now I hate you.
But think of it from this point of view. We care so much about the trees on our little... around our little house, that we have a guy who is a scientist who comes in and he'll say, you know, when you're trimming this tree, these are the ones that will maximize tree health. So he doesn't just chop them up.
Yeah.
He actually cares for them, which I know
nice.
Sounds
no,
snotty.
No,
but
I think that speaks to the reason I was so upset that the plant died. It wasn't that like I spent money on the tree and it was dying. It was like it's a life form.
It is,
like,
yeah. And it survived.
I know. I get really emotional.
Is it gone now? Is the
it
tree?
It is gone. It is like it is no more.
It's really difficult. There's a. I like to go to this place called Sunset Nursery on Sunset. It's way down Sunset Boulevard in Silver Lake, and it's this is great mom and pop nursery place.
It makes you so happy being there.
Every time you go in, you want to buy everything.
Into my home, I'm going to become this shop. I like the place I went to is like I imagine similar vibes where you're like, can I just hang out here? Like there's wind chimes.
It's such a peaceful. But I think the trick is to just do some research before you buy stuff so you know.
I feel you judging me.
No, not at all.
I did. Like, I literally, that's why it was so frustrating. I was like, why is my tree dying? Like, I was like, there's a spot in my house. So, like, what's a tree that wants a lot of indirect sunlight but not direct sunlight? And, like, I, you know, can water it, like, kind of frequently but not too.
That's the best you can do. You know, sometimes things just die.
I know.
Sometimes in life things just die.
Yeah, let's say that. Let's just say that it was natural selection and it wasn't my fault.
Don't take any responsibility. Sometimes you can't. I mean, yeah, in a certain environment, some things just, no matter what you do, are not gonna. You know, you can have two of the exact same, which we do. We have, you know, we have bougainvillea around the house.
I don't know what that is, but
Great. it's that red. It's you know, very. You see it a lot in California. It's those red leaves that you see like outside houses.
Okay.
It's like, you know, when you see
I know what you're talking about.
A swath of like red or pink or red orange leaves. They're great here in Southern California. And you can have two bushes seemingly of all the exact same conditions right next to each other. One will die and one won't.
Right.
And one will thrive.
Okay.
And you just don't.
Making me feel
you can only do the best that you can do. But it sounds like you did. You researched and it didn't work. And that's, you know, you can't.
Yeah, I'm gonna move on and, you know, get a different tree and always remember my first tree.
We have a tree funeral.
Oh, man.
What do you bury a tree in? Is it wrong to bury it in a wooden box? That seems... It seems
unnecessarily wasteful.
Yeah, it does. You had to chop down the tree next to it to build the box.
Well, I mean, luckily the outside of my house is also just like a mess of like weeds, and so I just dumped it out there. Like I'm starting from the inside, which I don't think is how you're supposed to do it. But
you haven't
one step at a time.
It doesn't sound like you've ever really had time to settle down for.
No. Yeah, I recently just was doing like some stuff on like my porch, like and my outdoor steps, because, you know, after 4 years of living there and not taking care of it, like the boards have started to warp and
of course.
All that stuff. So yeah, I'm living a life of luxury. And so I always feel like so embarrassed though. Like the worse it gets, the less I want to ask someone to come and fix it. Like going to the dentist. Like the longer you put it off, you're like, but they're gonna yell at me. Mm-hmm. And I don't want them to yell at me.
What is this?
Yeah.
What have you done?
Yeah. I mean, luckily, the guy, you know, probably because he wants to, you know, keep clients, like, didn't come in and go, this is really bad. This is, you've done a bad thing. But I was like fully prepared for him to be like, you're a bad person.
Get out of humanity.
And I don't like you.
No, well, I think as long as if people understand, like, I really did try.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to, they would have to be kind of an asshole. Like, if they came in and you were like, no, give a shit, whatever, then that's different, you know, but your demeanor isn't that. So I don't feel like, I don't think someone would come in and all of a sudden, you know, go back home and go, well, I met Anna Kendrick and she is
She's a disgusting monster person.
She should live in a cave because the house is too good for her. I mean,
I don't think it's anything like that. Yeah, I feel like hopefully this is a metaphor for like work and relationships and fulfillment, because otherwise we've just been talking about plants for the whole opening.
People get very, I mean, it is, with plants and pets, I mean, it's like it's part of our nature to sort of imprint our emotional baggage on these, and so it is. Yeah, I feel the same way too. I feel really bad when plants die or trees die. I'm like, oh, it's so it had a shot, you know.
Yep.
But at the same time, I don't have a problem eating a salad. That's a murdered that's a murdered plant, basically. So I don't know what the problem is, but I would love to. Do you have you want to grow like vegetables in your house?
No, that's fancy. That's really fancy, and I feel like it takes a lot of work. Like, but it's also another one of those things where sometimes I get overwhelmed with all the things that as a functioning adult you are supposed to be good at and know how to do. And I feel like cooking is one of them. And so, like, you know, growing your own basil and like it's such a romantic idea. But like when you think about like all the skills that we are supposed to have, like we're supposed to be really good at like – well, some of this is more – toward women than men, but, you know, I'm sure that it affects everybody. Like, we're supposed to know, you know, how to dress ourselves really well in the most up-to-date way and how to decorate our homes in the most up-to-date way. And we're supposed to know, like, cooking trends even. Like, you know, God help you if you're still cooking, like, molten lava cake. Like, it's the 90s. So, yeah, I don't know. I cannot get into like growing my own like vegetables and herbs without becoming overwhelmed by like all the things I'm supposed to be doing and like doing on a level that's like pretty high, but doing it just as a part of my basic life. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm supposed to be good enough to have a dang cooking show just to be considered like a successful adult. Like when people are like, "You don't cook?" I'm like, no, I don't, because it's one of the many, many skills I don't have. There's so many other skills I don't have, but cooking is like, well, then you're not a person.
Don't feel bad about that. There are a million and a half things that people want to be able to judge you for and go, you don't read a novel every week? Right. Well, you're not cultured. Like, why does that?
You're doing your life wrong.
Yeah, exactly. That's so dumb. But I will say the older I get, you know, if I ever see any kind of like travel shows or it's like, oh, we went to a self-sustaining farm, I get really wistful in a – like I feel like I get it. I get the idea of just having a farm that is completely self-sustaining. You grow all your own stuff. You go out and get your eggs. You milk the cow. You raise your own beef or whatever, and it just – and you do not reliant on anything. That sounds so wonderful.
Yeah.
But that's also your – you can't – that's your job.
No, I know. I don't know a lot about, you know, sustainable anything, truly. But, like, I was reading just, like, the introduction to this book about, you know, kind of the morality of hunting. And it was, like, from the point of view of someone who had hunted their whole lives. And, you know, just talking about the basic kind of balance between, like – well, if you are going to, you know, have a plant-based diet, like a lot of those things are being shipped across the country and into the country on trucks and planes and trains and like using fossil fuels and stuff. And I was like, oh, now I just feel terrible about everything.
We should never
terrible
eat anything.
About everything. But I was like, oh, yeah, like, yeah, when I want to cook squash during the summer, like I'm the asshole that's like, I will have my squash. I don't care that it is out of season in my current region.
I've never seen
it. I will have it.
Get her the squash quick. Yeah, I don't know. I
understand what you're saying, where like the idea of like growing things and knowing like that no harm has like come to anyone or the planet, like based on what I am ingesting, like that would be a great feeling.
That would be amazing.
Because I am riddled with guilt every time I have a meal.
But you also, you know, you do have a career and you have things that you want to do. You wrote a book, which is a huge accomplishment.
Why did anybody let me do that?
Because you had a story to tell.
I had stuff to say. I'm Anna, and I have something to say.
And also, you know, I think people do care. People do want to know because you've had a really fantastic career, and you're still really young, and so that the idea of, especially for people who are like, well, how do I? You know, how do I make my mark in the world? Like, reading your story is good for people because it inspires and gives them ideas. And so never underestimate the power of your own story, and not just for people who are, you know, like are on entertainment things, but everyone has a great story that they should share because a piece of it will inspire someone somewhere.
Yeah, no, I have definitely gone, you know, during the entire process of the book, I've gone between, you know, being really proud of it and really excited about it and just being like, oh, so narcissistic. Like, I'm writing about me. Like, who cares? And, you know, someone was saying – and sort of going like, how am I going to talk about – how am I going to promote something? You know, I'm used to promoting something where I can usually just go, the director was so great. Everybody else in it is so great. The script is so great. And then I'm there too. And how am I going to like – promote something that is literally just my thoughts. And someone was like, well, you know, like, I think it could be valuable for women and young women. And I was like, oh, but truly, like, it was actually kind of freed me because I was like, yeah, actually, particularly growing up, but still all the time, when I read anybody's story and, yeah, sometimes any woman's story, like, it just makes me feel less alone. Mm-hmm. Like, just hearing, like, anyone say something honest is, like, I feel more fulfilled as a person, and I feel, like, that I can be more honest with people and, you know, just less alone in the world is a positive feeling.
Yeah, because you don't know – you also don't have – the correct perspective on yourself for other people. So something that might – some story that might seem very innocuous to you or very superfluous could really resonate with someone else and inspire them to do something. So, I think it's good to – share, and it's good to – I mean, you know, there's a difference between you writing a book or you going to like a dinner party and never shutting up about yourself. You know, like
– I do that too though.
I brought everyone a book. I've signed a copy for everyone here.
And while we're at it, I'll just monopolize the conversation.
We're your family. You know, it's like, but I do think it's important, especially because the title of your book is "Scrappy Little Nobody," which immediately says that you at least view yourself as someone who, hey, I don't think I'm anything special, and I had to fight really hard in this world. Like, that's what that suggests.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what you...
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that it is that, and the only confusion that I kind of knew that some people would have about the title and, you know, kind of joke about is that, like, that I was being... like falsely humble, you know,
sure.
like overly modest on purpose, like for, I don't know, sympathy or something. But the meaning for me of the title is really about honoring that person and wanting to hold on to that person. Like that's the guy. And if I'm not that guy, that's a really bad thing.
Right.
You know, as opposed to like, I promise, who, me? Like that, I didn't want, I know that the title, that some people will read it and it might as well be like, little old me. And come off really disingenuous, but it's like a
hat, like an old timey hat.
Like, shucks,
oh,
Zach,
come on,
you like me?
Yeah.
But definitely, is about like wondering, like, am I holding on to the best qualities that I had as a person who was fighting?
Sure.
You know, and not being complacent, and not, you know, being too comfortable, and, you know, always fighting to, well, you know, in the literal sense, like, be better in my career, but just be a better person, be a more aware person, and, like, you know, that is, like, that, yeah, like, that's something I want to be aware of.
And well, also, you know, it's, I think whether or not someone is going to publish a book, they should probably, you know, like, when you're just kind of at the end of your 20s is a good time to start exploring and asking those questions, because right after that is when I think you really just start figuring out who you are, what you're comfortable with. You know, you can make all your mistakes in your 20s because it's not the 17 and 1800s when your life expectancy is 38. But I think it's a good time because it allows, when you put it all down, you can look at it a little more objectively and go, oh, wow, look at these patterns I never even recognized before.
Yeah, there were definitely things like that. Well, the biggest one for me was... when I was writing this, I was like, oh, I have issues with money. I, like, have an issue that I need to think about and work on with how I feel about money and not having it and then having it and people who were born into it and people who earn it. And, like, I need to fucking get over that. Like, mm-hmm. It's, like, thinking that other people were more privileged. It's, like, the amount of privilege I have is absurd. So I need to, like, stop being a little baby about it. And, like, there were so many times when I would be writing about something unrelated and somehow it would, like, you know, I'd be, like, furiously typing this tirade about. And it was just, like, dude, you need to check yourself. Like, get it together.
Yeah.
Like, you know, assuming that people who were born into money don't have issues is, like, is it very childish?
Well, everyone has issues because everyone's human and nothing.
And so there were, to be clear though, I lost all of that. I think there's like one mention of it, but like I definitely was at least self-policing enough to know like don't even give that to your editor. This is you being an idiot.
I understand. Our arborist showed up an hour late, and I was like. How is my assistant going to get my chai lattes here on time if you can't respect my iCal, sir?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I hate us. We're the worst.
We're the worst. We're the worst ever. No, but I do think, you know, you have to be comfortable with your environment, and sometimes your environment changes, and even when society might tell you, oh, this is the most positive way your life can change, it's change is still change, and you still have to figure out who you are, what do you want, how can you be a responsible... I think most people don't really ask themselves, well, how can I be a responsible member of humanity?
The human race.
You know, and so it's they're just so much more complex issues that are more nuanced than and so they're good questions to ask, and it's good, it's even good that you were able to get something out, see it, and then go, I'm glad I saw that.
Yeah.
It's like you're basically just taking out the guts so you can look at them and say, are these healthy or are these not healthy?
Yeah.
But you need that kind of third-person perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, sometimes I feel like I also identify a lot of those issues when I'm watching somebody else's art, you know? Like, when I'm – well, I say watching because that's – or reading.
Watching on a page.
Because I'm literate, I promise.
When I am gardening to make my dinner from all my food.
But, yeah, that – I mean, that's, like, such a – I mean, I remember, like, watching, I think it was Match Point, and, like, there's a scene, there's, like, this little vignette where, is it Cillian Murphy who's in Match Point, or is it the other one, that Jonathan Rhys Meyers? Yeah, those, yeah.
Right.
They look, they're both, like, very, like, luscious-lipped, beautiful European
very
men.
Very severe jawlines,
yes. Gorgeous, androgynous men. And he's, like, reading the Cliff Notes to War and Peace or one of the, you know, like, to a classic, and it's just solely for the purpose of discussing it with friends. And I was like, oh, no. Like, I've never literally done that, but, like, you know, like, seeing yourself reflected and wondering, like, you know, are there things that I seek out and, like, consume so that solely for the purpose, not of my enjoyment or fulfillment or, like, betterment, but to discuss it at parties, to seem superior. Like, ew.
But I think even that, I even think there's...
And that kind of honesty is, like, I feel like it is uncomfortable to put something like that on screen because it's, like, that is an ugly quality.
It
so,
is.
Like, that seems like also the goal.
But I think it's – I think that's really – again, there's nuance there because, yes, the type of person – it's like why are they doing it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you always ask the question why and what's the motivation. If the motivation is I'm going to this party, I don't want to look like an idiot because I want to feel like I belong, I don't think that's a terrible
– yeah.
You know, especially if you're someone who never really felt like you belonged. But if it's – well, you know, I want to climb my way to the top of this social ladder so that I can oppress, and that's different.
Yeah,
and
so that I can get away with murdering.
So that you can get away with murder, yes. But I do think that there are reasons that are acceptable and reasons that are maybe that are not great for why people would do things. But ultimately, I mean, we're all just fucking terrified. We're all, you know, I was just talking to our head writer because we're going to talk about the murder clown thing, this phenomenon of murder clowns. And I said, you know, it's such a perfect reflection of the constant state of unease and paranoia that I think people in general sort of feel right now in this world where everything just feels batshit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it feels even more batshit because we're inundated with social media and 50 million news outlets publishing 50 million stories a day because they have to make quotas, and we're just trying to process
it.
And that's just a reflection of the paranoia that we're all feeling. And I just think that's just kind of, you know, we want to belong. We all want to fit in. We all want to feel like we're a part of something. And it's,
no, in a way, and in a way, the murder clowns are actually doing us a service because we get to go, that's for like point at that and go, that thing freaks me out. And that is like, it is easy to know why, because it is scary and it seems like it's going to harm me. And there are these other like ideas and attitudes floating around, especially right now, that you're like, I don't really know. It is difficult for my brain to process all the reasons why I am upset and paranoid and nervous. And then we go, murder clown, well, that guy.
I
like you, it's like something that you can like pour all that energy into.
I think it's kind of genius, and hopefully it doesn't. Like, hopefully a murder clown doesn't really murder someone, and hopefully someone doesn't murder a clown.
Yes.
But it really is kind of a mirror to society at the moment, where it's like, hey, this is who you are right now. We're painting on these faces and, you know, like, eerily representing a version of ourselves to the world you know, through our Instagram pages or whatever. I mean, I think it's such an incredible, it's not illegal. No one's hurting anyone. It's just upsetting.
Yeah.
Because we feel, you know, like we have this paranoia deep inside. But I think it's good because it makes us talk about it and it makes us deal with it. And I always think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I feel like we've been talking, this is like a really dark conversation that we're having. And
it's a great conversation, though.
And I'm happy about it, but
it plays into this idea.
Does it Murder Clowns play? You were pointing to my book and saying that Murder Clowns play
into. I think you're behind it. No, I think because we're talking about the idea of being comfortable with who you are, which your book helped you do, which I think this is kind of a societal reflection of that, of being, of having to face who you are and be comfortable with it, and what are you comfortable with and not comfortable with. And, you know, I just think it's, I think it's good that you wrote a book because I think it's good to get it out. I think it's good to talk about stuff. I mean, was this therapeutic for you?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, and I don't know, like, I definitely, like, I don't want to say it wasn't challenging. It certainly was, but, like, I also, you know, don't want anyone to feel like, oh, so you had a drag, it was a drag writing it? Like, I'm not going to read it.
but, oh, I hated this here.
Oh, it was the worst. But, like, I mean, there was a day that I woke up and, because I kind of do things, you know, in absolutes. And so I wasn't one of those people who was just like writing like on the weekends in between, you know, shooting movies and stuff. Like I had to just like sit down and lock myself away to do the bulk of it and like, you know, hand in a draft and just like did it nonstop, like, you know, set myself a schedule and like didn't, you know, worked weekdays and weekends and, you know, just made it like a 45 day process to just put anything on paper, I say paper, you know what I mean, on the computer.
Yeah.
So that I would just have like something and I could look at it. And there was a day in that chunk of time that I woke up and like for whatever reason I was like I started writing something that was like really dark and I thought really funny. I thought funnier than anything I'd been producing yet. I hadn't had any feedback yet, but I was like, I felt like this is the funniest thing that I've produced yet. And it was really dark. And I remember like my brother texted me and a friend texted me, just happened to text me that day and say like, how's it going? And I was like, weirdly today, like I'm kind of on a roll. I think I'm like doing something great. I think it's the best thing I've done so far. And it ended up being something that my editor was like, we can't, there's no way, there's zero chance that we're putting this in the book. And I think if you told me that on that particular day, I would have just like thrown in the towel and be like, yeah, you know, forget it. But, you know, because it was about food and body issues, and it was really dark, like and you know, and satirical. And, you know, I think that ultimately, like, if it is something that could have been triggering for anyone, then like, of course, it's not worth making some people laugh if it's triggering for like even one person.
Sure.
But there was a point where I was like, I feel like I'm doing something like really honest and, you know, talking about something that, you know, in a non-nuanced space, because I don't really exist in a space that has nuance most of the time. Well, I mean, in films and stuff, yes, but doing most press and like Twitter. That's like really the two places that
it's not
I
like you're
that
a stand-up,
I exist.
So you could go, like, spend an hour taking people on
so
a journey.
I was like, but this is, I'm obviously joking. Like, not even that I'm joking. I'm obviously like talking about like how much the average American woman like hates herself and deals with, you know, trying to be okay with, you know, who you are physically, because you know that that is something to strive for. And then also just being like, yeah, but I'm the worst. And I was like so disappointed that, and I did cannibalize like a couple of my favorite jokes from that and put it at various places in the book. But yeah, I was like, I felt like that was really therapeutic for me, even though it isn't, in the book. And I, you know, I'm totally fine with it.
But there might be a context for you that would allow you to talk about those things, because there's not, I mean.
I will say that the vast majority of it is nuanced in a way that I would not feel comfortable, you know, trying to put into 140 characters or talking about in a normal press situation that wasn't something like this, quite frankly.
You couldn't. The social media,
I don't know if what draft you have, but the last kind of chapter of the book is like a fake reading guide that was also essentially like my predictions for what the clickbait would be that came out of that came out of the book. Because I know writing it that like there are jokes that would be so easy to just take out of context and like create a juicy headline.
Just a headline just for clickbait. Oh, if I can find that would be really great.
Like, I think, what is it? Like, I compare Zac Efron to Charlie Manson, but like in a joke where it makes sense. But like, that's a headline right there. That is a headline right
Anna
there.
Anna Kendrick says,
yeah,
Zac Efron is Charles Manson.
So like trying to let go of this, what will somebody deliberately misinterpret this sentiment as,
right,
is hard because they will do it. Like that will happen. There's nothing
I can
impossible.
Do. And no matter what
And even
you
like
say.
Things that I say in this interview, even though the people listening to the full interview are like your listeners are like nuanced people who like have complete thoughts.
Sure.
Like it doesn't mean that it can't be taken out of context. And that is like a really annoying space to have to exist in. Tried really hard to let go
of
that.
The worst part about the clickbait stuff, especially with like celebrity gossip and all that stuff, is that it's disguising it has done this really disgusting thing of, in some cases, disguising itself as a form of altruism, where it's like, hey, I'm doing you a favor, I'm letting you know what this person said, because they know that, number one, outrage gets the most traffic.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that so much of it is for a commercial purpose is upsetting to me. Mm-hmm. It's like you're manipulating people's sense of social justice for money.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about it like that.
And you know that most of them will not research the issue to listen to the full thing, get the full story. They're just going to go on, be mad, come back, shout at you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a fucked up.
No, there was a story that I told on a podcast about how things that get sent to my house, like if people are able to figure out my home address and send me things, that I have to get rid of it just on principle, because it, like, if you go through the proper channels and you want to send me something through my publicist or something, like, that is great, and I will read your letter and all that stuff. But if it's to my home, like, no, I'm saying no to that. That's crossing a line. And I told this story about how
– privacy invasion.
Yeah, exactly. And I told this story about how, like, you know, the extreme example is that someone sent me a pair of diamond earrings, and I was like, this has to go. Like, this is – no. Like, I'm not doing this. And there were a couple people who were like, oh, she didn't think – because people who – listen to the podcast, I don't think felt this way, but people, you know, then it was like reduced down to a couple sentences, and people were coming at me on Twitter like, huh, wow, you didn't think to sell that to charity? And I was like, can we all operate on the assumption that I'm not an out of touch monster?
Right.
Like, obviously, yes, I actually went online to look up what the product was. I saw that, yes, even though they were diamond earrings, they retailed for like $170. I have tried to sell things on eBay before. And like, I had no way to literally verify that they are real. Like, they could have just been like Claire's earrings that was put in a box. And and I give like a lot of money to charity. And like, but I didn't say that in the story because it makes the story boring.
Well, and also,
and it was like, oh, I really didn't know that we weren't operating on an assumption, on the assumption.
It's worse. That, it gets worse.
Yeah.
Well, I think the problem is that a section of people want to assume that other people are not decent and have the worst motivations.
Mm-hmm. No moral compass. Like, they're the only ones with a moral compass.
And sadly, I think that says more about them than it does about the people that they're going after, because it's like, we've lost the ability to have conversations in social media because of its character limitations. I think it's shallow. It's physically shallow in the universe, and it's emotionally shallow because you can't say more than a blurb of an idea. And so people have lost the ability to want to have conversations and say, hey, I saw that earring thing. What was the story with that? Did you try?
Yeah.
So then you could go, oh, well, actually, I did this. They just immediately go, fuck you.
Like,
you
I researched it, and I did. There was one person who seemed really upset about it, and I was like – just for you, I will tack an extra $200 to my charitable donations at the end of the year that, like, I give annually. But, like, other than that, I don't know what to say
Yeah,
to you.
People want to get angry and shout and poke fingers. They don't really want to understand and have conversations. And that's,
well, that's
what
not
we
fun.
Need to be doing.
I like poking fingers. I feel so great when I'm in my ivory tower and I'm going, you're all terrible.
I'm better than you.
Like, everyone is terrible but
it's
me.
The moral high ground has become, like, the new drug where
yeah.
people feel like they have the moral high ground. They feel like gloves are off. I feel like you violated my moral code. That's
yeah.
your fault, even though it's my moral code. And I'm allowed to say whatever I want to you because I have the moral high ground.
Yeah.
And that's not – it's horrible. We
Especially should talk. When I feel like I am constantly trying to convince people I'm terrible. I'm like, I am shitty. I'm a shitty person. I'm a disaster.
Do you really feel that way sometimes? Do you really feel that way?
Constantly.
Why do you think you feel that
constantly.
Way?
Constantly. I mean, but do you not feel that way? Are you not like, oh, my God, I'm a disaster. Like, how am I a person? How, like, you know, how am I a homeowner? How do I, like, how am I, you're a married man now. Like,
yeah.
how did this happen? I'm a child.
Better.
I haven't even figured anything out.
I've gotten better at some of it. And I think a lot of it really just has to do with sort of, you know, like, mindfulness and living in the present.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you're living in the past, it's a lot of like, I should have done this. Or why
yeah.
did I do this? When you're living in the future, it's a lot of worry. Like, what if this? What if, you know, what if everyone discovers I'm a fraud? What if I can't?
Yeah.
You know, but when you're living in the present, you go, okay, well, these are the things that I have today. I did not obtain any of these things by nefarious means.
Right.
That's okay.
That's true.
It's okay to have things. It's okay to not have things. Like, things are neutral. You know, it's like, what do you have in your life that you're thankful for, and what can you do? What can you do that day?
Yeah.
What can you just get through that day, and what can you appreciate in that day? And that's okay, you know?
Yeah. I really thrive in just constant anxiety about the future, though. So I'm not really absorbing what you're saying. As much as I'm giving you the face that I'm like, wow, you're changing
that.
Me. You're
I appreciate you trying.
I'm going to be honest.
I mean, I'm not even saying I'm great at it. It is something that I struggle with. My wife says to me all the time, like, I think you just – because I'll go, oh, my God, but what if this? And I don't know. And she'll go, I think you just need to create – drama for yourself
oh,
to deal
yeah.
with. And I go, oh, you're right. Of course. I know she's right. But recognizing that
God,
I do that
yeah.
is helpful. And I think it's just because we need to – some of us just have obsessive brains and we always feel like we need to be doing something. And when there's not something to do, we're not comfortable. So we have to like knock something over and go, I need to pick this up. You know, like, we have to create the mess.
I would just
mess.
Like to take a minute to appreciate the cat-like motion you
Thank
just
you very
did
much.
In knocking
I appreciate
that,
that
bottle
Thank you.
Of water
yeah.
over.
It was very
like,
cat-like.
You were a little YouTube kitty cat.
I was a YouTube kitty cat, and I was just discovering the world. the thing about body issues and self-loathing and the stuff that you were talking about before, I feel like there is a context where it'd be nice if you could talk about those things because anything that's a positive voice in that area that can say, because you're not saying those people over there, you're saying I am a part
yeah.
of this group and here's what I am feeling.
I know.
And I want to deal with
that. I know
that.
And at first I struggled with the idea that me saying this is what is inside me, this is how I feel, could be, you know, harmful or triggering to someone else, because I was like, so I'm supposed to lie? Like, and say that I have, like, a healthy relationship with my body, because I don't.
It could also
like,
be helpful and inspiring to people.
I know. It's a tricky one, you know? Weirdly, I, in that day, did not crack the code to changing everybody's mental health
what?
And physical health on
well,
body
Well, you need
image.
To get back in there and work on it.
I know. It's, it is
it.
Surprising, because I'm so good at everything.
Do you have any insight at all that is helpful?
I don't know. I to be honest, I feel like there are so many areas that I'm like looking to other people and learning about. Like not just body image, like so many, you know, I will say in defense of social media, it is like an excellent space for me to hear the opinions of people who've had different experiences in their lives than I have. And, you know, it wasn't even until recently that you know, I was reading someone else's content and they were saying like that it's you because sometimes you get caught up on body image and then physical health because like how do you reconcile wanting someone to be okay at whatever weight they are, but then like would a doctor say that that's not healthy? But like, shouldn't we prioritize that person's mental health and quality of life over like something that is in theory detrimental to their physical health? And I was like, see, this is why people are smarter than me. I'm thinking about the issues. Yeah, I love it. I love that about people.
You know what? I'm going to throw something out there. I'm going to pitch an idea to you, and you could obviously do whatever you want with it. But I think there's a TED Talk in your brain. I really do, because I think you have a perspective and a point of view. You know, people will listen to you, and I think having the point of view of someone with a really honest and authentic take on what body image means, what mental health means, what are healthy boundaries, what's okay to, you know, I mean, it's just because it just gets sort of gray. It's like, well, I mean, I want to feel good about myself, so what's wrong with X, Y, or Z? Well, X and Y are unhealthy, Z's okay. So, you know, sort of coming
well,
up.
Well, I also would feel, you know, that is part of what this piece that didn't end up in the book was about, you know, is that I feel hypocritical because, like, to suggest that I have a healthier lifestyle than anybody who is, like, 20 pounds heavier than me is absurd. Like, the idea that, like, I, you know, have regular exercise and, you know, like I, you know, I will just eat a Twinkie and then go, oh, I should just skip a meal. Like, that's just, you know, come on now.
Right.
So it's definitely, I definitely treat my body like a dumpster on fire. Like, I'm definitely not over here like, well, here's how I became so healthy, you know.
I think it's okay to say that as long as you're, I think.
And that's sort of what that piece, you know, was about.
As long as you're honest.
The fact that so many people are like, what's your fitness secret? And I'm like, I hate myself. That's my fitness secret.
that's okay, though, because that's honest. You're not, I mean, there's a difference between playing something for laughs that are cheap and easy jokes. And there's a difference between there's a comedy element that comes out because there is a shared experience that people have. Comedy is a defense mechanism, and it helps you process the awfulness of things. You're not laughing
at... No, it's true. Like, all my favorite comedians, their basic message is, like, I hate myself.
Well, because they're dealing with the darkness, you know? So if you're coming from a place of trying to understand the darkness, and their comedy happens to come out of that because of the nature of what you're dealing with, that is way different than pointing at a group and going, haha, look at those freaks
over there, which
you're not doing.
But I actually feel like the thing that I could give a TED Talk about is more that it seems like men are not encouraged, but like it's certainly more easily understood when men say like, oh, I have self-loathing, I hate myself. And when a woman says it, it's like, oh, why? What's wrong?
Right.
It's like, no, I'm just saying like the human experience. Like we all have these feelings. And I don't know why there's like whenever I try and, you know, bring it up with maybe a reporter who works for a less nuanced outlet. I just couldn't get away with it because it would be like, oh, this is like a breaking news story. I'm like, no, this is the human condition, but cool thing.
Well, right. But, you know, again, because and it really makes me – I've really come to – in the last year, I've had a lot of talks with friends of mine who have also been – a part of social media since there was social media. Been in the digital age since, you know, the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. And a lot of us are really kind of coming to this place of, boy, I don't know how real any of it is. So when someone takes that bit of your conversation, they make it a headline, they turn it into something that it's not.
Yeah.
It becomes this simulacrum of kind of like a matrix of like, it's not, It is rooted in some reality, but the context of it, you've manipulated that to tell the story that you want to tell, what the person wanted to tell.
And I will be totally honest that like there were times when I would feel like I was losing my compass, like writing the book and just going like, what are people, do people want to hear certain things? And, you know, and I would listen to this podcast, other podcasts of This American Life, like just, you know, and go like, okay, so they're okay. So there are – like these are popular podcasts and like it would kind of just realign me to like this is what's real. Because you're right. Like when I see content that is obviously based in like – outrage, or they're peddling outrage, or they're peddling like kind of like misery, or that German word that I'm always too afraid to pronounce.
Schadenfreude.
Yeah, thank you. That was gorgeous.
I just said it angrily, which is how I speak all German.
And would be like, what am I doing? Like trying to fill 250 pages with, you know, thoughts. So yeah, I definitely feel like this kind of thing makes me understand and be rooted in reality and go like, okay, like people do want to have conversations and like change their opinion on things.
I have a mind-blowing question for you.
Oh my God.
Which is, so just hearing you do all the research and go, well, what do people want? You know, have you thought about maybe not focusing as much on, you know, like, do you think you define what you should do or what you want based on what other people want, and how important, because really,
I think that was more about self-preservation, like less like what should I create, and more when I would second guess what I had created and go like, is this a bad idea?
Right.
You know, and is this something, because, you know, there are things that people don't want to hear. Like there are projects that I have worked on that I didn't have a great time on, and people don't want to hear it. If that one is their favorite movie, they don't want to hear it. And I don't want to bum them out either.
Sure.
Like I remember asking someone, a friend of mine who is in a very large franchise that I love, and asking him like, so like what to, like, what's it like working on those? And he was like, oh, it's a fire. And I was like, oh no, I wish I hadn't asked.
You mean
like,
Larry the Cable Guy from the Blue Collar Comedy
Tour? Yeah,
that's
exactly who I mean. He's my friend.
you didn't want to know about
it. So just in the sense that, like, you know, A, I don't want to bum people out, and B, I don't want to give more of myself and have it backfire. Like, that would be,
because then people are like, oh, you're privileged complaining. You get to be in this great thing.
Well,
fuck you.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, like, you know, there were things that I was not going to talk about because I was like, nobody wants to hear it. And Edgar was actually one of the people who encouraged me to like write about the process of
promoting Edgar Wright?
Up in the Air and being nominated for an Oscar, and like just kind of what an overwhelming and terrifying experience that was, because I was like, there's no way for me to do that without coming across A, ungrateful, and B, like really melodramatic. Mm-hmm. And like I didn't find that at all. Like the people that I showed that to, like, you know, really responded to it and found it interesting. So there were just times when I second guessed like how honest I could be without alienating people. And that's more what I mean, like in terms of like what do people really want to hear, not like,
sure,
what's the thing that everybody's doing, and how do I
totally
replicate
understand
it?
I totally understand. But I do find that the best decisions or the best things that I have in my life were because most of the time you don't really ask yourself a lot of questions. I think you set up a bunch of things on sort of like autopilot,
mm-hmm,
so you can,
mm-hmm,
just kind of get through your day, because there's just a lot to figure out in a day and there's a lot to do, and it streamlines the process. But very often, I think you don't really ask yourself, do I still feel this way?
Mm-hmm.
What do I want? So
yeah.
I think it's important to sit down. So the best things that have happened to me, I've said, like, what do I want?
If I were to ask you the really like cliched question, like, where do you want to be in 5 years? Like, not that you have to tell me, because maybe it's private. maybe your vision board is your own. But I mean, could you answer that question? Or because I can't.
No, I mean, I know I have a basic idea of the types of things I want to be doing. But I just know, like, you know, when I was miserable and just riddled with insecurity and doubt and
last week,
okay, yesterday, you know, I started the Nerdist thing because I was like, well, wait a minute, what do I actually want to be doing, and what do I want to talk about? And with my wife, when we started dating, it was one of the first times I had said, well, what qualities do I really want in a partner that are supportive to me, and how can I give to that person in a complimentary way?
Yeah.
I'd never really asked that question before. So when you ask those questions of like, what do I actually want, and writing them down, the answers, I think it's really a good place to start, because I think it a lot of times will actually surprise you when you start like you wrote a book, or just like you see it in the physical universe, like, oh, I guess I do want that. Well, how can I get this? Because everything means something.
But like before that, because I don't know your life story, but before that, like, what were you like, oh, I should be like on TV, I should be doing, like,
I had this general sense. Oh, I mean, I wanted to do stand up, I wanted to be in entertainment, I had this general, it was just more about specificity of goals and also understanding the motivation behind those goals, because someone might go, well, I want $1 million. Like, sure. Okay, well, fine. Why?
Yeah.
Well, just because I'm going to have money. What does that mean to you? Like,
right.
To understand the why, until you get to the sort of the root cellar of, oh, it's because I didn't have money when I was growing up. I equate this with this type of feeling, and I want security. I want to be able to take care of this. I want to be able to – you learn so much about yourself when you – really get to the root of why you want the things that you say. And then sometimes you find out you don't really want the things you think you want, which is really freaky.
Yeah. No, that's actually terrifying. It's like one of my – I've got like three of like my greatest fears, and I will tell you one and just one.
Okay, just one.
But like just getting like everything in theory that you want, and then like what if you're still unhappy if you get all the things that you want? Because then you're like, oh, I have really missed the mark on – life, the one that I get, like, sure. The one life that I get, I have ruined it, and that would be disappointing. So I feel like I should follow your lead. Well, check in more often about like what
you should.
Yeah, like what is the goal?
You might not be afraid of the same things.
Because I feel
you
like a lot of people when that question comes up is like, I just want to like travel a lot, and like. I guess I want to travel a lot, but I feel like not as much as I'm supposed to. You know, like as much as like the ultimate goal of a person like is supposed to just be like to be able to travel the world. And I'm like, no, I'm down to travel, but you'd be surprised how much I prefer my couch.
Of course. Traveling. You don't have to be a leaf on the wind 365, you
like
know,
backpacking and
all the time. But I just think, you know, the self-examination is real, because you can't. You know, when you look at yourself scientifically, you can't manipulate the world around. I mean, you can't manipulate data until you have the data. Like, you can't fix problems until you know what what they are.
Right.
Or what, you know, or you might go, oh, I'm not afraid of these things I thought I was afraid of anymore. Or actually, I think I am more – like, you might find that you're healthier in places that you didn't think you were. I just think it's – I think it's good to really examine that, because it just – you're not living. Otherwise, you're just being directed by your emotions all the time.
You know, I'm having like a kind of mind blowing moment right now where I was about to say that I have had a similar experience where, and it's one of the things that I mentioned in the book, and like checking in and going like, does that still upset me? Is that person a person that I would still not want to see? And actually, I think that you planted that in my head the last time I was on this podcast, because there was an actor that we were discussing, and you were like, oh, I've always like held a grudge against that person, but actually now I just realized like, oh no, I don't care. I don't have an issue with him at all anymore. But you like think that you do when you actually don't.
Right.
And like, yeah, I mean, what you're talking about, I was going like, well, yeah, I guess I do that thing. But actually that was you, which is blowing my mind.
That is pretty crazy. Bit. Well, I think it's
just like
been
checking in and going like, does that thing still scare me? Does that thing still upset me? Like, no. Because it's amazing the way that you just go, well, this is who I am. This is what bothers me. This is what I don't like. And like, you don't want to let yourself change, or you don't think you change, or something. Like, I don't actually know what that's about.
Well, I think it's about it I think it's a conservation of energy, because there's this economy of energy that you have to get through your day. You have only so much emotional energy. You have only so much physical energy. And so, like I said, you set a lot of things on autopilot. And so you allow yourself to be directed by your emotions, because it's just, it's fire hot, ice cold, projectiles falling from sky, must run under thing. You know, like you allow yourself to be you set up your kind of emotional this emotional maze that you can navigate your day with, that you feel is probably the most safe way for you. But then, you know, over time, they just, you know, like the insecurities and the fears compound, but you're not really examining them. And then before you know it, it's like, oh, they're overwhelming, because you're not, you don't really strip them back and go, okay, what is this thing really? What does it really mean? can I actually deal with it? No, I'm not ready to deal with that yet. At least I know I can file it away. This one, you know, it's just basically like cleaning out your hard drive.
Yeah.
You can't, your hard drive.
I also put that off for years too. So that explains a little bit.
If there was just a disk cleaner that you could run on your brain and go, these are just cache files. You don't need them anymore.
Need this.
Let's just
get
dump.
Out of here.
That's what it is. They're like it's emotionally cached files that you don't need anymore that are just taking up RAM. So,
Wow. I'm just surrounded by Star Wars wallpaper, and you just said RAM. Like, I knew we were going with a hard drive metaphor, but you really took it there. Instead of saying taking up space, meaning both in your hard drive and your brain, you went with RAM.
I apologize for being so on the nose.
No. Never apologize for your absolutes, because this is who you are. And to apologize for a statement like that would be to apologize for the core of your being, and I would never want you
okay,
to
do I take it back. I do not apologize. I don't apologize. But I do apologize a lot. But people, I remember the last time you were on, which I think was maybe 5 years ago, 4 years ago.
God, was it?
2012?
Ooh.
2012.
You know, when we were 15.
Ago. We were like 15 and seven. I was 17. You were 15.
Yep.
And people loved it. They loved you on the show.
Oh, that's great.
And I think, you know, the handful of times that I've seen you between now and then, I always want to say, please come back on. But I never want to – I don't want to be the guy where when people see me, they go, he's going to fucking ask me.
Tricky, isn't it? Because I mean, to be honest, like I – and I feel like there are probably – I don't know. Did Tom Hanks say something like this, or I'm just imagining it? Like I feel like there was somebody I ran into who had maybe just done your podcast, and so maybe it was a conversation I had where, like, if we could do press like this all the time, we would want to do it all the time. Like, this is great. Like, having these conversations is great. Like, please – say that the next time we
absolutely.
See each other. Because I want to be like a Birbiglia style, like repeat. I love his episode so much.
Oh, he's like, great.
I literally, like, there was one of his appearances, like, was about a breakup, and it was like when I was going through a breakup, and I was like literally like, just is this speaking to me? Which, you know, doesn't happen when you watch Entertainment Tonight.
No, it can't, because again, soundbite culture. We have to get as many people – we have to get as many celebrities on our show in 42 minutes.
I know, and have them all say nothing.
Nothing.
Have them all say precisely nothing.
And that is so much about what – yes, it's so much wheel spinning.
By the way, not that I have said anything of substance. I feel like I've been doing a lot of like, yeah, you have to think about stuff and think about your brain and, you know, fix your life, and going, yeah, I'm not really offering a lot of substance.
You don't have to disclaim this. You've said it. You can't, it's impossible. The junket system and couch guest system is impossible to say anything of depth, because it's just contextually, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
If you were to sit on, you know, Fallon's couch and go, I have, you know, I hate myself and I have a lot of issues, then the audience is going to go, well, that's
and that's where you get the reaction of like, oh,
and then there's not enough time to explore that.
Yeah.
So people can't see
that. You know, that's
that
why
it's
I
safe.
Love stand up too. Like, it's just like a long form exploration of ideas. Like, to watch somebody explain their point of view for an hour is so glorious. Like, and, you know, the idea of putting them on a couch, like comedians more so than celebrities, when I see them, like, on a late night talk show, I just cringe, especially because they usually do like a truncated version
of a bit,
and it's so painful. And it's really like, I think it speaks to how difficult those shows are, that like this really polished bit of comedy just does not land.
Well, and it shows you the importance of context.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when I do couch stuff and they go, well, do you have any bits you want to do? I always go, no, because it's weird. I would rather run the risk of just not seeming that interesting on the couch rather than trying to cram a bit.
Ooh, and it feels so bitty.
Hey, like, I heard you. Did you just go to a laundromat?
You've got a specific story about being in a laundromat and someone stole your change, and maybe she was wearing a red shirt. No, nope,
all I gotta say about
that. Well, weird.
Is,
you should ask.
Well, it's weird because the person who pre-interviewed me told me that. I mean, it's detrimental how much content people expect now, because it's forcing us all to shovel stuff without substance because we're just trying to get stuff on the fire.
I'm like the worst version of that because I both feel really annoyed by it and I'm totally guilty of it.
Totally guilty of it. Me too. Like my
There's nothing new on Netflix. Man, there's literally thousands and thousands of pieces. I'm like, there's nothing I want to watch.
Exactly. Or even just social media. It's like, oh, I should probably throw something on Instagram today. Why? I don't have to. Why? What's going to happen if I don't? Who gives a shit?
I'll forget who you are. That's what will happen.
But we're just so conditioned to think that we, you know, we have to keep stoking this social fire or like the machine's going to break down. Yeah. And then when are we? I'm really terrified that this Orwellian thing is happening in our culture, but there's not a body that's Big Brother, but we are
right.
That we're so in each other's fucking business and we're contributing to it.
Totally.
So we're allowing people to think they should be able to tell us how to live, tell us what to do, judge us from their, you know, hastily built ivory towers. But we are all Big Brother now, yeah. And it's fucking weird.
That's deep, man.
Man. I don't even smoke weed, and I feel like we should fire up a thing. A bong. How did I forget the word for bong?
Wow.
I've only ever used one once in my life. One time, and right out of college, I used a bong, and I did not
this
do
is,
it well.
We were just on a tangent about content and the youths and, well, you didn't say youths, but I was feeling like we sound really old. And then you went, you know, we should fire up a bong.
One of
like,
them,
yeah, no, we do.
Marijuana
we,
jars. We what do. Are they called? one of those grass tubes. I don't know what they're called. They got the water in them and the greasy thing. I don't know. I didn't mean to take this in such a strange direction, but it is. This kind of building it off the idea of self-exploration, which you've done in your book, Scrappy Little Nobody, which is available now.
November 5th?
So this will go up closer to the... Okay, this goes up November.
Is it Jesus Christ? I'm such a fucking like.
Oh, no, that's when this is going up.
Oh, this is going up November 8th.
So we can say book is out.
The book is out November 15th.
Would you do it again? Would you write another book or did you feel like...
I don't know. I felt like there's part of me that felt like, well, that's it. That's all my stories. Like I definitely – because obviously, you know, it's not just the book. There are, you know, countless stories that you think are hilarious. Like so many things that I was like, my editor is going to love this and like was like, this is not funny. I was like, what? So there
you
were lots of
live
like
more.
Had to be there kind of stories. So yeah, there's definitely a feeling of like, yeah, that's it for a while. I gotta like have some experiences before. I know, like Mindy did two books in a couple of years. I genuinely don't know.
You know, I think it's okay though. I think it's okay to when you think about, well, people are gonna like this or people are gonna not like this. Like, well, some people will, some people won't. I think not grading yourself on 0 or 100% is a good thing. It's like, yeah, you know, so when people say, hey, I hated this thing or I thought you were dumb on your thing you said on your show was stupid. And I kind of just go, okay, you're totally, you know, not everything is for everyone. I don't know what to say. It's totally fine that you feel that way. You know, you don't have to like it.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Well, actually, speaking of that, like the most interesting part about this, like, which, you know, made me realize something that I had never noticed before was that I have, you know, I like maybe a dozen people I've spoken to who have, you know, read the book, who've offered their thoughts. Because usually I'm just like, oh, you read it? Okay, cool. Anyway, like I'm like so such a sensitive bitch. But the people who have, you know, talked to me about it, each one of them has cited one or several things as like, oh, that one line about this thing like that. And they've all been different. Which has never happened because usually with a movie, it generally everybody is like, oh, that scene, that one line, like maybe there's two things. But for whatever reason, even if there are like, you know, multiple things that they liked in a movie, people just choose like this one thing and it's always the same thing. And I just got so used to that I, you know, didn't think about the fact that there's almost never variation in people's favorite part of a movie.
Sure.
And I have been like so that's been like really flattering, I guess, that people like once a couple people read it, I was like, oh, I guess maybe those will be like the the lines or the stories that people mention the most to me. And it, there hasn't been a repeat yet. And that's been like unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know if, like, do you, and I don't know what accounts for that. I genuinely don't. Like, why a book has a different reaction than a movie. But like, do you find with stand-up that people usually are like that, there's one joke and you're like, yeah. Like, generally people are like, there's a couple jokes that people always reference. Well,
there's a sliding,
or is it different?
There's a sliding scale so that there are some sort of like A-list ones that you kind of learn, oh, okay, so these are – people are probably going to – they're going to know – they're going to remember these. Because it's just – when you do hundreds of shows and you see, okay, there's
a pattern. That has literally been my experience with films my entire career. So,
but I think there, but I do get some people go, oh, this one thing that you said once that I completely forgot about, oh, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I just think with a book, you're doing – you know, comedy is so much about getting to the funny part that there's, you know, there can be a lot of fat that people sort of scoop out because it's like, oh, I just want to get to that funny part. But with a book, you know, you're telling stories with a lot of detail and people are really focused on every single word and every single page. And so,
well, like, I think about, like, you know, Tina Fey's book, and like there is one specific line and one specific story that I just always think about, and it like didn't occur to me that somebody else who read the book wouldn't have that same experience, because usually in a film it's like, oh, that one line,
sure, but they all, you know, but they all have, you know, because a movie is, or a movie or a stand-up set is really about beats.
Yeah.
And a book is about experiences. And so people, whatever their own personal baggage is, is just going to kind of latch on to an experience in the literary work that speaks to them. So I think that's, and this is just full of those, you know, like a movie basically has kind of one arc.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, these people want this thing and they get from here to here. But this is a series of things that kind of make up who you are. And it's sort of like people are, you know, the same way that you have slightly different relationships with all your friends. It's like, oh, we connect about different things. I mean, like, it's the same kind of thing. They're just connecting at different points.
I know, that's
true.
I mean, it's kind of – it's alarming how often, like, a friend will say, oh, you said this one thing and it stuck with me. I'm like, I have no memory.
Are you sure I said that?
No memory of saying
that. I don't think – that doesn't sound like something I would say.
That doesn't sound like me.
Did you ever – I can't remember. Did you say when you were sort of talking about your exploration of body image and all that stuff, did you ever start to arrive at something that was helpful to you to deal with it?
No, I mean, I don't want to overplay, like, you know, it was just like one story in a book of stories about, like, you know, trying to figure yourself out and trying to deal with who you are. And, you know, that particular one seemed tricky because it, you know, deals with a physical health issue. But I mean, I don't know. I guess there is part of me, maybe this is more like, you know, laziness than an actual well thought out philosophy, but there's part of me that's like, I don't know, so I'm damaged and everybody's damaged. And if I was like perfect and balanced and enlightened, like, I would be no fun to be around. You know, like, maybe that's just me being lazy and not wanting to work on myself. But you know, there are things where I just go, you know, unless it's like really hurting my day-to-day life or like, you know, affecting other people, it's like, so these are my issues. Like, this is the baggage. I don't know. Like, maybe that's really lazy. But I don't know. There are just like aspects to my personality that I'm like, I don't feel that I need to fix that because it is what makes me human.
And what is this idea of perfection too is – because there isn't really a shared idea of perfection. Everyone's idea of perfection is dictated by their own insecurities or what they wish they could change or what they, you know.
I know, especially like there are times when I'm like, oh, I need to like, you know, figure out how to like, you know, be really stylish and decorate my house really well and cook, you know, like sort of what we were talking about at the beginning. Like, and then it's like, then you meet someone who kind of subscribes to like a very Kerouac kind of philosophy and they're like, ugh, like with your white picket fence and you're like, all right, like you are chasing an ideal that some people sneer at. And it's not that you should agree with, you know, any one person, but like it is kind of sometimes helpful to remember that like one person's ideology shouldn't affect you that much because there are plenty of people who reject that ideology.
Well, I also think this idea of perfection is about conformism and trying to fit in. and be accepted in a group. But the idea of, you know, I guess, quote unquote, flaws are about individuality and standing out and being different. And so what are, you know, and that's, those are the things you should be comfortable with, because those are the things, like, the flaws make things interesting. It's, yeah, like, you know, it's a dumb example, but, you know, let's say, you know, there's a, you know, there's a million action figures that get printed, made of, like, Han Solo, and then one, you know, like a handful of them get made and he's got two left hands. So as the toy maker, they might go, well, fuck, this one's got two left hands. We can't sell this. It's super fucked up. But guess what happens over time? Those become the most sought after because they're the most interesting.
I'm really happy you went with this metaphor.
I tried to keep it so on the nose for the type of
really,
things
really
that's
on
expected.
Brand for,
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's very expected of me. But it was the first example that I could think of. Or like a, you know, like a stamp. Oh, this was printed upside down and there are only 10 of these. Mm. You know, oh, it was a useless stamp, but oh my God. Now this is the most interesting thing in the world because it's so individual and it's so distinct, you know? So I think, yeah, I mean, I think embracing
I don't know,
those
like,
things
like
is
somebody
good.
like Arianna Huffington, I feel like she's always on talk shows. Is it Arianna Huffington? Yeah. Like, cause no. Yeah. The Huffington Post. Yeah.
Yes.
So she's like always on talk shows talking about how like she's like making herself better and meditating. And I'm like, you are so boring. I don't know her. Maybe she is a hoot. Maybe she is the best friend to have in the world. I've never met her, but yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't want to spend time with somebody who was like, I'm working on becoming a flawless human.
Right. I think it's interesting to figure out.
I want the Han Solo with two hands.
You want the Han Solo with two hands because you know, you want to figure out how those flaws, so to speak, can be your strengths. How they can, you know, like, maybe there are things in those flaws that are actually incredible assets, but because we have this idea, you know, and I totally have it too. I moved a lot when I was a kid. I always was trying to fit in. Mm. And so, you know, that idea of other people's opinions, and even being a comic, of course, has been too important to me in my life. So that's a thing that I struggle with. But I do think that at the root of those quote-unquote flaws are real authentic bits of individuality that people could make strengths, you know? So I would say in the exploration, in the list making, you know, maybe take on the things that you hate about yourself and go, well, maybe is there a way that this isn't every horrible thing that I think it is? Maybe it's actually kind of interesting, or maybe it's just something that makes me, you know, unique, so that you're not just I think that's what it is about the Kardashians that bothers me, is that it's
I'm so glad you made that leap. That came out of nowhere. I'm excited.
It's the pursuit of just becoming this kind of this sort
like
of like
canvas?
Android that's kind of, you know, more obsessed with public image than
right, like with being
substance.
Inoffensive.
And I'm not saying,
than,
and I'm willing to say, I don't know them at all.
Yeah,
that is my headline judgment of them. I have not done the research to know them as people, but I feel like that is what that represents to people. That sort of just that one kind of superficial stratum of culture where it's like, well, just be famous and, you know, change all your features at all costs. So you just kind of start to look like one thing. And that to me is the kind of like that willful conformism to, you know, like, let's just all be like this.
Yeah.
Where we can't really show any emotion.
I know. I find that with like, I really can't deal with how toxic those like fashion criticism shows are, like, you know, like Red Alert, it's bad fashion,
right?
And I'm like, so unless it's like a tight strapless black gown, like, it's, we don't like it.
You can't.
Because I'm like, do you not see, especially when normally it's on a very thin, very tall woman,
right?
So it's like, I don't, it's so like blatantly obvious to me that like usually the things that are chosen as like the best things are, you know, normally the exact same like three silhouettes and, you know, like
right
color palette and all that stuff. And that like when someone wears something that is really different, it is automatically frowned upon, and it's just like, do you not see like what a really like heavy-handed metaphor this is for like everything? It seems like damaging to reinforce like, yeah, you know, these things are good things, and like, you know, I think they really pat themselves on the back for occasionally choosing something with like a little ornamentation on it that is slightly different than the last one. But yeah, I can't handle those because it just seems like it is the most like distilled version of like, if you are different, we will make fun of
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
It's like, how is this a sanctioned television program or magazine article that is like approved by like many, many business people? It seems like this is just
it's
sending a really weird message about individuality.
It's sort of the snake eating its tail, because shows like that are created so that people at home can be distracted so they don't have to self-examine.
Yeah.
You know, so they can just sort of zone out.
Or one could argue, in, you know, to that they can most easily digest, like, this is what I'm supposed to be. Which
right.
is, you know, which is not healthy.
Which I think, you know, if people didn't take it so seriously, it's like, all right, fine, it's mindless, dumb entertainment,
yeah.
you know. But when people like start to live by it, and again, I think that's part of the Kardashian thing too, is like striving for that. You know, or it's like, you should never, your face should be so absent of any sign of living that you just look like a, you know, like a you were created in a lab and you never can emote because your face is so,
right.
I mean, like, have lines,
have
life, like,
right.
have experience. Like, it's not, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't, again, it's, I took this in a strange direction because I've been thinking a lot about it lately in culture, and is are we in a headed in a good direction, and is social
have you noticed that I'm trying really hard to like absorb what you're saying and not say anything bad about the Kardashians, because I can't take that kind of heat. I can't handle that kind of heat. I'll take the heat.
You don't have to say anything. I'll take all the heat. I will take all the Kardashian heat. All right, I will take all the heat. But it is, you know, I just want people, I want people to want to have conversations. I want people to want to understand each other. And I want people to just kind of examine and ask if they're making healthy choices in their life. You know, I don't know. That's
Wait,
all.
Can I just ask if I heard correctly, this is going to air on Election Day?
No, this will. Oh,
November 8th.
No. Yes.
Yeah, like, so, okay, so here's my thing, right?
Okay.
So we are putting this out on Election Day, and I had just, like, as we were talking...
Recorded,
you know,
in October.
We recorded this, you know, before Election Day. This is after debate number two. And I feel like we have been talking a lot about, like, this is what I would love if everybody could just be cool and do this thing. And I was just wondering, like, I wonder why the conversation has gone this way, and I do think that it might have something to do with, like, we just watched you know, debates that were upsetting, and we're in a political landscape that's upsetting a lot of people, and like the fact that this is going out on Election Day, it's like, it's, I just think it's interesting and weird that like we are, you know, having this conversation that like no matter where we go, it ends up coming back to like kind of personal philosophy and like, you know, social philosophy.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting that like something this, the climate right now, but the climate right now is just like forcing us to have those conversations with ourselves and with each other.
But it's not just here, the whole world. Because
it's a stressful motherfucking time. Like, this is stressful.
The whole world is kind of batshitty right now.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of leaders who are saying strange, crazy, strong things and taking very strong actions and doing very...
Maybe, I don't know what will happen in between now and then, but, like, you know, Nigel Farage is saying, no, all men talk like that. Like, Nigel Farage is saying, like, which is, like, in that case, we should run away from all of you. If that is true, you know, like, yeah, so you're right. Like, it is, there is, like, a world, something weird is happening.
Yeah,
it
I
does
don't know.
Feel like the beginning of them.
You know, I think it's probably a good idea to run away from us, but we're not super smart and we're very easy to manipulate. So I feel like it'd be like running from a zombie. It's like,
no,
all you're gonna do is
I
just run and then and go upstairs.
Like, no, but if I were a guy, I would be so offended that like I was getting lumped in with people who talk that way. I would be like, how dare you say that to defend your own actions? Like,
I think the reason that
are not all bragging about committing acts of sexual violence. That would be really weird.
Yeah, I don't. The reason that I'm not super indignant about it is because I think it's sort of hard to be like, I mean, guys really get the short end of the stick. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. So I don't really, I just assume.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
I just assume like, because I just had a whole conversation with Anna Faris about this exact thing.
Really?
Yeah, and her podcast partner, Sim, because we were both like, yeah, maybe when I was 19 and I was trying to fit in with the, it's basically just, it's shallow talk because people don't want to have real conversations yeah. about things. And so.
No, and I do feel like, I'm interrupting you, but maybe this is why a lot of guys haven't been like immediately really vocal and saying like, no, we fucking don't talk like that, is because it feels like, well, I have said like, oh, that girl's hot or I want to fuck that girl or something. But like, that's not the objection. I think that people are trying to conflate it with just plain vulgarity,
right?
Which I don't object to. I love vulgarity. I don't love like sexual aggression.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. So I think like a lot of guys have been having this conversation with themselves going like, well, I have said things that aren't great, but like that's only because someone is trying to trick you into thinking that what he said is just the same as like saying something crass.
Well, I also think a lot of people wouldn't believe, you know, if you're a dude and you go, oh, well, I don't really have conversations like that. I think most people go, fuck you. Yes, you do. Of course you do.
Isn't that
you
weird?
Know? Yeah, because it's sort of like guys are guys. And, you know, like I said to Anna, I was primarily raised by my mom. And so I don't. And believe this if you want to or not. But with the exception from, you know, when I was 19 years old or 20 years old and trying to quote unquote fit in because I was afraid to have real conversations mm-hmm. with people. And I really think that's what a lot of that is. It's just insecurity and trying to posture and like piss on the
sure.
tree and, you know, like be the big dog, you know, because you're afraid to have a real conversation and go, hey, I'm a person. I have insecurities. Some people I don't, you know. I think people don't believe it, but I do feel like I don't relate to that. I don't understand it. It does make me feel weird. Like if I'm in a, and I'm not really in this situation anymore because all my friends are, you know, we're all dorks. So we don't talk, none of us yeah. talk that way. But if I am in a group of dudes and they start talking that way, I get really like, I don't know how to react. And I don't know if I would have the presence of mind to go,
hey,
you stop saying what you're saying. I would probably just leave or make some sort of a snarky comment like,
yeah.
Well, it's you guys want to hit each other with rocks now?
Yeah,
or, you know, like,
yeah.
Should we
get a measuring stick?
Yeah, should we punch each other in the dick now? What happens? Like, I would say something defensively snarky like that.
Mm-hmm. No, I know what you're saying, but what's interesting is that like, I feel like you are not letting yourself off the hook because you have said things that you are not proud of in your life, but like, so is it everybody?
Of course, everyone.
You know, and it's just interesting to me that like, again, I feel like even like listening to you talk this way, it feels like they've done a really good job of convincing the population really quickly, because this only happened a couple of days ago,
right,
as of what when we're talking, that like that what we object to as women or as men is like that he, you know, used vulgar language,
right,
or you know, was talking about someone in a way and like talking about what he finds like sexually attractive.
This is
no, I'm not thrilled. Like, you know, how can I be thrilled about that? I'm not horrified. I'm not an idiot. But then to say, like, also, like, if you were in a group of men and a guy, like, was saying, like, well, I can get away with, like, I can just go up to a girl and just, like, grab her tits and she, you know, she can't do anything.
Right.
Like, if you heard something like that,
yeah,
you would be like, I'm not hanging out with you anymore. You're a bad person.
Right, right.
You know, like, and I think that.
And I would go.
Like the fact that you are sitting here going, well, I've said things. Well, when I was 19, I said that. I really feel strongly, and I know that I'm a woman. I don't know anything. But, like, I feel pretty strongly. I would put money on the fact that, like, no, you have never been in a room with someone who is, like, saying, I can get away with hurting
right,
a woman.
Right.
You know, like.
Yes, that is an important distinction,
yeah,
and you're absolutely right. And.
And like locker room talk is like, yeah, I'm sure that in proverbial and literal locker rooms, men have said things that they wouldn't be like super thrilled to tell their mom that they said. But I don't think that the majority of the population is like, you know, talking about non-consensual stuff.
If I heard that in a locker room, my first thought would be like, these people are full of shit.
Yeah.
They're just trying to – and maybe part of the issue is why do guys feel like they have to bond in that way? Like, why is that? Do you know what I mean? Like, what is it about that where, you know, where they – do they want everyone to go, yeah.
Well, you're better than – you're our leader now.
Yeah. That's what everyone wants, is just for everyone to go, you are our leader now. That's so fucking funny. That's a great take on it. Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. There is a distinction between vulgarity and like direct non-consensual aggression. Yeah. And it is really, really crazy. I mean, it's such a crazy time for everything. And again, taking it back to the murder clowns, I think the murder clowns are just a mirror to all that craziness and saying, and in a way kind of saying like, hey, society, this is what you are right now. You're a fucking murder clown. You're a horrifying, painted representation of something that should be fun that is ugly and horrifying. And this is who you are. And I think that's what we're so freaked out about. And going back to the other thing about beauty and body image, you know, I will never shut up about the show, but it's one of the reasons why I love The Twilight Zone so much, because they go after stuff like that, you know, in the 60s before people were really talking about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But there is one particular – they're probably the most famous episode is called The Eye of the Beholder, and it is completely about beauty standards. And it's really fascinating. I mean – now you've seen enough anthology stuff, so you expect, oh, there's going to be a little twist at the end.
Right.
But at the time, people didn't expect that, and it was really interesting. And it does address a lot of those issues about what is beauty, who says what's beautiful. There's a line in there that says, you know, when everyone is beautiful, no one will be, mm-hmm. which is such an interesting idea and another reason to embrace individuality.
When you were a kid, did you ever read Star-Bellied Sneetches? I think it's a Dr. Seuss book.
I remember the concept of it, but I don't remember exactly what
like
it was.
That there are sneetches, which live on beaches, mm-hmm. you know, it's little creatures, and some of them have stars in their bellies and half of them don't. And then a man comes to town and says, I can put a star in your belly. So they all have stars. And now the like elite original star-bellied sneetches are like, well, this is garbage. Like I was better before and now. And then, you know, that same kind of huckster says, well, I can take the stars off and then you'll be the cool ones again. And it goes round and round and round like that until they're all like none of them can remember who originally had a star and who didn't. And like it was one of the ones that my parents read to me constantly. And like I think about all the time because it's like,
that's really interesting.
Like you want and that happens in fashion a lot. Like you need to have this kind of dress because only this, you know, expensive brand is producing that kind of dress. And then once it trickles down to, you know, Forever 21, H&M, and everybody has access to it, like, God help you if you're caught in that dress.
Right,
it's
exactly.
It's just like, oh, my God, guys, like, this is literally a children's book about, like, you know, superiority and, yeah, beauty standards and all that.
And embrace, you know, well, there's another version of that story, too, that not officially, but another version in my head where they whereas they go, well, we want stars in our bellies too. And then someone comes along and harvests all the star-bellied ones. It's like, no, you made yourself the thing that got consumed. You didn't have to. You should have just been happy with who you are. By the way, I was at dinner last night, and I'm bringing this up because when I moderated your panel for Trolls, which when is Trolls out?
November 4th. So
November 4th.
It's in theater. I hope you already saw it, y'all.
Book and Trolls. But at the Comic-Con panel this year, which I moderated, I got to hear your version of True Colors. I was at dinner last night, look across the restaurant, Cyndi Lauper at the restaurant, I adore her.
Yeah.
And she just, you just look at her and you go, she's rad. Even if I didn't know who she was, she's rad.
Did you talk to her?
No.
No.
I'm terrible at talking to people.
I wouldn't.
Because I just feel like, what am I going to say?
Yeah, I know. I never want to meet, particularly musicians. Like, actors, I don't have a huge problem meeting because you're like, oh, you were in that thing and I loved you in that movie.
Yeah.
And when it's a musician, it's just like, you are Paul McCartney all day, every day. It's a fucking different thing.
There's nothing I'm going to say to you that someone hasn't said to
you. Yeah. It's like, I mean, like, I went to the Grammys and I was like, I'm the least famous person on the planet. Like, it's just musicians are a totally different level. Like, the most famous actor is not like the same thing as the, like, a kind of, you know, up and coming musician. Because you're just like,
music is a universal.
I guess I just mean that, like, you know, they just are their like persona all the time. I don't know, like, where, you know, somebody like Al Pacino or something, like, who's like such a tough guy in movies, but like maybe he's an absolute lamb.
You could totally
in real
take
life.
Him. You could totally beat the shit out of Al Pacino. You should beat the shit out of Al Pacino. That would be amazing.
But I don't know. It's like, yeah, all I mean is, like, it's not just that it's like a celebrity. It's that it's like, it's Cyndi Lauper.
I have a gross confession.
She's Cyndi Lauper all the time.
I have a gross confession to make, which is I would be too embarrassed to go up to her because I envision this playing out like, hey, I think you're really awesome. And she's like, thanks. And then I've interrupted her dinner. But what I really secretly – I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I really
Come
secretly
on.
Hope to happen is that she looks across the restaurant and goes, hey, at midnight, or I love Walking Dead, or whatever.
No, it's so embarrassing. I knew you were going to say that.
Me?
I knew you were going to say that.
Please.
I knew you were going to say it.
Such an
I know, because it happens to you.
And then I'll say, don't bother me.
Because it happens to you one time, and you're like, this is better than crack, heroin. Like, this is the greatest feeling. I'm the most powerful, amazing person. And it is, like, so I definitely know what you're saying. And I knew, like, when you were like, I'm too embarrassed, I was like, I know what he's going to say. Because it's, like, it is such a humiliating thing to, like, admit that, like, of course that's what you want to happen.
Mark Maron said something really...
Like, but it's basically, it's exactly the same principle as, like, you see an attractive person and you want them to be like, I couldn't help but notice you across the room.
Couldn't
you're so
take
beautiful.
My eyes off
you're
you.
Absolutely stunning.
You're so magnetic.
It's like so embarrassing, but it also is also the basis of Twilight and 50 Shades of Grey. So, like, it's a very universal.
Yes.
Like, that's the feeling. Is like little old me.
Oh yeah.
Like
exactly
you know who what, little old mousy me and like
that's,
nobody
that's
like
Harry Potter
I'm
not, Twilight
yeah, but
little
I
old
am
me
special. I am special.
Little old me.
Like
Twilight should have been called
like,
little old me.
Like little old me, and you're telling me that I'm the chosen one. I'm the most
right.
special. So, like, that is that feeling.
I'm going to be the queen of vampires.
What could be the most, more of a, like, chosen one feeling than, like, someone you admire going, you, I know you, and I admire you.
An owl like, delivers you a letter ooh. Because you're chosen.
Yeah.
Mark Maron said something very funny to me, and I found it to be, you know, Mark's very honest. He's very honest. He's just and it relieved me so much to hear him say it because it made me feel, like, less of a monster for, you know, for even having a remotely similar idea. But we were in Austin and we were getting food. There was a big line of people. We went up to put our names in and they were like, okay, it'll be like a 45-minute wait. And he turned to me and goes, yeah, you never want people to recognize you in public until you're trying to get a table. It's like he wanted the person to recognize
and
us.
And be like, well, right this way.
Oh, please, right
oh,
this
please,
way.
Sir.
Oh, don't wait out here. And it was such a...
Like, you're just a person,
yeah,
but
exactly.
You're not.
Exactly. So, like, because it makes you feel like, oh, you know, you got me. I was being narcissistic in my head for a second.
No,
like,
but you go, I would
special.
Never say that.
No, I never no. say that, but it is.
But like,
honest.
Literally, like, what, like, the fact that Mark Maron said that to you, the fact that you were brave enough to just say, like, well, I mean, secretly, I'm hoping that, like, Cyndi Lauper, like, loves At Midnight. And, I mean, that is the same principle as the Cliff Notes scene in Match Point. It's
yeah.
just like, when someone says something to you that you would not have been courageous enough to admit, but you absolutely feel,
yes.
even though you're like, I'm such an asshole,
right.
but you still feel it. That is like the best thing. And I had a very similar conversation with Kay Cannon, who wrote the Pitch Perfect movies and 30 Rock, and is like one of the great, you know, comedy writers in my opinion. Before I wrote the book, she was like the only like writer that I'm really really close to, and I like was like, do you want to like give me a writer pep talk, or you know, I was kind of expecting somebody to tell me how to write a book. When I was like, yeah, I'll write a book, I thought someone would tell me how. And I had a very similar conversation with her, and I felt like there were times when I was like, I want to omit certain things for self-preservation reasons. And like knowing that I had told Kay that that was my goal, I was like, it has to stay in. Damn it. So
you trapped
like,
yourself.
even though it's super likely that she doesn't remember the specifics of that conversation, like, I mean, I think like the fact that you can listen to this podcast and hear something like that and go, even if like you don't literally relate to it, is like, yeah, if I saw Cyndi Lauper, I would want her to recognize me. But like it just speaks to like ego, and we all have moments like that, and it feels so fucking good to hear someone say it.
We all want
to
fit in. It's like there's nothing wrong with having those types of selfish thoughts or having those thoughts that – I mean, I don't – you know, people throw around the word narcissism a lot, and I think it's a fun, jokey thing to mm-hmm. say. True narcissism is someone who
terrifying.
Is unable to accept any responsibility for their actions yeah. and who legitimately doesn't understand something if it's not about them. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's a very clinical – but we all have brushes of that, and that's okay because at the core of it – part of our evolution is like, well, you need to be a part of a community. Like, you need to be a part of something if you want to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just where a lot of that – so it's fine to have those types of selfish moments. I think how you – what you do with them is a different story. Mm-hmm. Or if you define yourself by them, yeah. that's a different story. But it's okay to be human and sometimes be selfish or sometimes –
that's exactly what I mean. Like, yeah. self-improvement is great, but there's a certain point where you're like, or I could just, like, forgive myself for having, complicated emotions.
It's okay. Forgive yourself. Like, it's – honestly, it's just forgive yourself for – I mean, don't forgive yourself for murder. Forgive yourself for being human, yeah. I guess, is ultimately. And I think once you start doing that, then, you know, that kind of helps chip away at the I hate myself, I hate myself, I hate myself. Because if you're kind of forgiving yourself a little bit, then that'll start to swell in. So write stuff down. Forgive yourself for things that maybe you've been holding on to for a long time. And it's okay. You're okay. Ultimately, you're okay.
We're all okay. That's what we're getting at.
Even though the world feels
even though
okay.
everything's falling apart.
Even though today's election
and today
day.
Is literally, it's possible that it's Armageddon. I also feel like there is, it's also, you know, because this, like, you know, news cycle moves so quickly, I feel like it's super possible that that whole rant about, like, locker room talk will be, like, the moment, like, will be, like talking about, like, binders full of women,
right?
Romney, you know, like where, like, will it be like super old news, and everyone will be like, "No, we've already talked about all those."
What are they even talking
issues.
About?
Why are they still talking about that?
I don't even know what's happening.
And also, hopefully, it's possible that this, you know, maybe hell opened up and swallowed a certain person.
It could be like
that. Would be
it
great.
Could be like that last season of Buffy where they found out that their town is over a helmet.
I cannot believe that you just did that to me, because I'm literally watching Buffy from the beginning and I'm like on season 4 and
that's
I'm
not
really
giving anything away.
Mad at
that's
you.
That's not giving anything away.
But wait, don't they say that they're over Hellmouth in literally episode 1?
Well, there you go. See, so nothing was spoiled.
Okay.
Nothing was spoiled.
Okay.
Listen, the episode where Buffy dies is great. whoa, shit! Oh my god! She's not even in the last season.
I actually, no. I actually did know some, well, you know, we don't actually want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but I do know that there's like actually something that happens with that. With maybe.
All I know is that David Boreanaz has never not worked a day in his life.
Right? That is crazy.
He went from Buffy to Angel to Bones.
Like, it is actually, I mean, he does actually like hold a record for like most syndicated TV shows or something like that.
It is crazy. Like, when you, because you don't really think about it day to day, but when you go, I think Bones is like one of the longest running shows.
Yeah, no, it is on. And here's a little, you know what? Since you gave me the, I hope that Cyndi Lauper recognizes me.
Yes.
I will give you this.
Please.
I am current on Bones.
You're current.
I am up to date on
Bones. You are all on Bones.
It is one of those shows that so defies logic
mm-hmm.
and reality.
Yeah.
And like the technology they use in it is like, well, can we just access all, you know, cameras in like security cameras and just use facial recognition software to find this person? Like click, click, click.
Yeah.
Enter.
Yeah.
And enter.
Yeah.
And it's done. It's just like when it's that kind of bold denial of the reality of how technology and crime solving works.
Yeah.
I just go, yeah, I will watch this program.
That's why I'm so forgiving. Like when I watch, because I watch The Flash, and The Flash is very
similar. And the entire time I'm going, this is absurd, and yet I'm like, next episode, continue.
That's why I like superhero genre though, because they do the same thing on The Flash. They're like, oh, we'll just access that camera from that satellite. Could you really just do that? But when if I start to – that's the agreement you make with the show. Because if I ask that question, I have to go, well, it is a show about a guy who can run at like Mach 3. So maybe I just have to allow myself the freedom that
I don't
not
know.
All this is
I don't
gonna...
know. I don't, to be honest, I always feel like that's a silly like a false equivalency when people are like – something doesn't make sense and they're like, oh, but the guy who turns into a giant green monster who is I'm like, well,
I think they a show just has to follow the set of rules that it sets
up.
And
if they're
alien rules, they gotta follow those rules. And if they're weird, we can hack into this rules, that's fine if you're okay with the agreement.
Okay.
It's the violation of those rules. It's violating the agreement that you make with your audience.
When you
set it up, yeah. But anyway, I'm glad you were here to talk about your favorite show, Bones.
Damn it, I wish I knew like when it was on so I could have done a little lazy joke about like, tune in, Bones, Thursday.
Tune in to Bones. Watch Bones. Are you on Bones? Nope.
Thingy.
Just think it's great.
Just think it's a great, great show.
Just think it's great. And please come back. And please come back anytime. I'm serious. Like, it's always a...
Great, I'll just show up. Don't think I won't.
Fucking do it. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Scrappy Little Nobody, available now. Trolls in theaters. Anna Kendrick, a person.
I hated this.
That's the first
I'm Anna Kendrick, and I've hated this.
Little old me.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.